Hello and welcome to the Raptor Show, powered by DoorDash on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I'm your host, Wim Liu. I am joined by the one and only Iman Adan of BasketballNews.com, of Dishes and Dimes. Iman, from Raptors Twitter, what's going on?
I'm good. What's up? How are you?
Honestly, I could be doing better, but it's all good. The Raptors are on a four-game win streak, and that is how I determine happiness in my life. I think that's a healthy way to live, no?
I think so, too. Except when they have whole years in Tampa, so you're just depressed for a whole year?
I feel like the pandemic also hurt that on top of it. I mean, obviously, they were in Tampa because of the pandemic, too, but yeah, that was tough. Although I didn't mind the season, like, stretching into, like, May and like, you know, the regular season, I mean, because it was kind of nice, you know? It was just like, oh, the Raptors are going to lose. Well, whatever. I'm just going to go outside and, like, play basketball or, like, just, like, go outside and enjoy 20-degree weather. Whereas, like, when the Raptors lose now and you can't even go outside because it's a pandemic.
Like,
and also it's yeah, and I'm like, man, so I got to really yeah, like, last night I was literally, wow, this is a great radio banter, but, like, yeah, last night I was, like, taking out the trash at, like, 2 a.m., because Friday's collection day at my house, and it was, and I have to go down this, like, hill, and I almost, like, slipped, and I was like, damn, I see why the players are mad about this. I see why the players are mad about this, man. I'm really slipping while holding a huge garbage bin. So, anyway, we're not here to talk about any of this stuff, because we're here to talk about the Raptors, who continue to be successful, and one of the reasons they continue to be successful is because of this big lineup that they've been playing a lot of late, partially because the Raptors guards have been backup guards, mostly Svi, and I guess Yuta, you can kind of consider him a guard. You know, they have been out in the protocols, so the Raptors have had to go bigger. Also, Nick Nurse has decided to slash both his backup point guards, which makes sense to me. They haven't been playing well. So I was reading Zach Lowe's 10 Things column this morning, aka the format that I completely ripped off for my coverage of the Raptors. And as always, I see Zach showing us love. And point two, Zach discusses the Raptors' big bench lineup with no guards, which have been a smash hit the last few times we've seen it this past week. And then I remembered, wait, hold on. A specific somebody was writing about this way back in November. A piece called Length Matters, the NBA's Long Ball Revolution Might Be Coming. And that someone was you. So first off, what did your story cover? And how does it feel to be smarter than Zach?
Yeah, I feel like you copied Zach copied me. It's just like this whole circle, the circle of life. No, Zach did not copy me. But what the Raptors are doing is it. What was your question? I'm going through like a million things in my head right now. What did my story cover?
Yes, yes. The one that you wrote back in November.
Right. Honestly, just the Raptors' size. It was incredible to watch both the Cavs and the Raptors sort of start this off. And Evan Mobley and Scottie Barnes have been phenomenal. And they kind of slotted in perfectly to what both of those teams were doing. And although you watch the Cavs and you watch the Raptors, and it's very different, right? They have like a million centers and the Raptors don't have any. But both teams seem to be bucking the small ball trend. And so my piece was just talking about how basketball is cyclical and it's such a copycat league where everyone's trying to do what the next team is doing. And, you know, small ball started a little bit with, you know, I talk about it starting out of necessity for the Miami Heat when Chris Bosh went down and they were like, all right, Shane Battier, I guess you're up. And then, of course, the Warriors kind of are the pinnacle of small ball and how that sort of changed and what Masai Ujiri and Kobe Altman have kind of done is just look and say, okay, well, we're not going to copy that anymore. We're actually going to buck this trend and we're going to go the opposite way. And Masai has talked about that quite a bit. He's talked about zagging when everybody else zigs or zigging when everybody else zags and just doing the opposite. And that's exactly what the Raptors have here. And it's been so incredible to watch. There were times early on in the season where you kind of see the method, but as Raptor fans, we're all kind of frustrated because it's like, oh, they're getting destroyed on the defensive glass, or like they need some sort of interior presence. What is happening right now? And the defense was so aggressive and people were talking about like, yeah, I get the Raptors need to blitz and I get it's like this aggressive style of defense to get into the passing lanes and just have their arms everywhere. And they've been leading the league in deflections for almost this entire season. So that was working, but we saw nights where it just wasn't. We saw nights where the Warriors would just hit every single 3-point shot. And it's like, why do they keep giving up these threes and what are they doing? And now we're starting to see it actually work, right? We're starting to see it really come together. And a large part of that is just the Raptors having their guys healthy and having it there. And now that it's starting to work, I feel like the rest of the league is really paying attention and watching it. And that's exactly what Zach Lowe talked about in his piece today.
Yeah, and I think when you're thinking about the Raptors version of this, because, you know, you also wrote about the Cavs as well. The Cavs are going with the tall ball lineup, which I don't think you would really describe the Raptors specifically as going tall ball. The Raptors are tall at the guard positions. The Cavs, at least when they've been healthy this year, have played two guards together, and then they play three centers essentially together. And that's a bit of a different approach. Maybe can you compare and contrast a little bit just between how the Cavs are approaching this sort of like big, you know, big ball revolution versus the Raptors and their sort of more wing kind of oriented approach?
Yeah. I talk about that. The Cavs are doing it with height as well as length. They're starting, like you said, three centers, and then they have their two guards. And both of them are tailoring it to their rosters, right? So with the Cavs, you have Jared Allen, who is just a phenomenal interior presence, a great rim protector. And you have Evan Mobley, who's this unicorn that makes it all work because of his ability to guard guys along the perimeter. So they just have this tandem there that is absolutely phenomenal, because what are you going to do against that? You're always going to be met with a 7-footer there as well. And then Lauri Markkanen kind of operates as a wing, even though he's a 7-footer. And as Raptor fans, we're familiar with having a 7-footer play like a wing on offense. And on defense. Dark times. Whereas what the Raptors are doing is completely different. And in all honesty, maybe I have this preference for wings. I find it so fun. Like, it's just cascading arms everywhere. They don't necessarily have the Jared Allen that's protecting the rim, so they can't really operate in the same way. So what they do is they just overwhelm teams with their length and with their size. And I kind of talk about the Raptors being able to play the most aggressive style of defense in the NBA, because what wingspan and what leg span does, contact length, is something that's talked about, which is so weird to me that the NBA doesn't measure that, because wouldn't you want to know how, like, I watch Giannis sometimes, you can watch Scottie or Pascal, and they're like, they can take the length of the court in three giant leaps. Isn't that something I want to know at the combine? I don't get why the NBA doesn't measure that at all, but they don't. That's something that the Raptors, I'm sure, have plentiful of, is guys with incredibly long legs and long arms, and they're able to sort of make up for the mistakes. And Zach Lowe talks about that in his piece, how you have to have, you know, smart guys who can get into those passing lanes in the windows, but just also having the length and the size to disrupt that. And he talked about what the Raptors do by placing Pascal on guards, which, hey now, Pascal's looked phenomenal and amazing this year, but that also helps the Raptors on the offensive end, because what they do is they do their transition defense is phenomenal. It's really great. When they're at their best, it's really great. I mean, the Raptors defense feels, talking about the Raptors defense, it almost feels like we're talking about it in theory, because they have so many nights or so many first half, it almost feels like, where it's like, okay, they're not actually doing anything, but when they turn it on, it'll look really good. It's kind of how I talk about the Raptors defense. But when they turn it on, it looks really, really great in that transition defense, because of their ability to, once again, take the court in three giant leaps and get into those passing lanes. And there's not a lot of mismatches that you have there when you have everyone that's almost the identical height. And yeah, Fred VanVleet is like 2 feet smaller than everybody else on the court, but he plays so much bigger than he is that it doesn't matter. So what the Raptors are doing right now is revolutionary in every sense of the word. And it's just something that's very exciting. Even if it doesn't pay off this year, it's going to pay off down the line. And I think Raptor fans should be really excited by that.
Yeah, and I think, you know, first off, I mean, you know, the point that you brought up in your piece about the stride length is so smart. You just don't hear it discussed at all in NBA discussions, where, you know, you brought up the example of, like, you know, part of the reason why Usain Bolt was so successful with the sprinting was the fact that, you know, he had a longer running gait than a lot of other sprinters, right? And, you know, it would take him like 45 strides to cross 100 meters rather 40, than 40. It takes him 40. Oh, sorry, 40, yeah.
As opposed to 45, yeah. So he has five less strides to cross that 100 meters, which is a massive advantage.
Exactly. And I think especially in sprinting, like, you slow down each time you take a step. I think that's one of those things. The more time you spend in the air, the better. And of course, if you take less strides, you're going to be quicker. I think, you know, in thinking about the Cavs approach and the Raptors approach, it's so interesting because they're both kind of like going about the same thing, which is, how do you protect the paint? And the Cavs are like, well, the simple thing is we have shot blockers waiting at all times, whether that's Mobley, whether that's Allen. I guess to a lesser extent, Markkanen, he's tall mostly.
Just for the fact that he's tall, yeah.
Yeah, he's not that good defensively otherwise, but, you know, still, I think, you know, being 6'10 at the three is useful. But the Raptors approach
in my piece that he also has the smallest wingspan relative to his height the team, which I think is like a really fascinating thing too. I don't like that it's called ape index because I feel like there's lots of reasons for that are historically not great. But he has the smallest one on the team.
Yeah, yeah, I was surprised at that specific term, which you did not come up with, but you know, that is a term for difference between wingspan and height.
I was looking for alternatives, and it was like gorilla index. I was like, none of these are good. You're not giving me a good option, Google.
Okay, all right. We just got to reinvent that one. I like talking about +5, +6 wingspan. I think people generally get that idea. The Cavs are going with the traditional centers. Let's have multiple centers, and then let's play more of like a drop-back scheme, and we can kind of protect around that, right? And that's something that teams have done. The Raptors have gone the opposite way. They don't start any centers, but they will start like 5 forwards, and then what they'll do is they'll switch everything. So it's a totally different approach. They'll put the, as you mentioned, they'll try to overwhelm with length. They'll bring the length to you rather than sitting back and keeping it at the rim. They know they have no actual like shot blocking specifically at the rim, but what they will do is they're going to keep you from getting downhill towards the basket anyway by switching. Yeah. And that's what the Raptors are doing right now. And it's such an interesting approach. And I think it just speaks to like the overall changes in basketball strategy in the last 10 years, because I just wasn't as big of a fan of basketball like prior to 2012. In the same like nerddom and depth that I've sort of think about it now, but like it just feels like in the last 10 years, about every 2 years or so, you're going to see something, right? And back then it was like the ice defense was so big. When you're going to drop back, you're going to push everything towards the sideline, you're going to keep your center there, and you're going to force him to take in mid-range jumpers. And that was the big thing. And then, you know, teams start to get really good at pull-up threes, especially the Warriors. And it's like, well, you can't ice defenses anymore because guys are going to pull up from three. So what's the adaptation that you got there? Well, then you got to, like, probably, you know, play more switching defenses to sort of avoid these things. And that's what the Cavs did to the Warriors. And then teams are like, well, how do we beat these switching defenses? Well, we're going to, like, you know, really seek out these great ISO one-on-one matchups and then, you know, isolate bigs and drive them out, you know, from the perimeter and then, you know, get by them. And then teams started to go in zone because of Nick as well. And it's like, now this is like the new thing. Like, this is really, I think, when we're looking back on what, you know, how the league's going to move in the next 2 or 3 years, like, this is, as you wrote about, like, this is kind of the new thing. And I think basketball strategy in the bigger sense is just like it needs to be discussed about more. It needs to be highlighted more because I think, you know, in baseball, for example, strategy is talked about at such a high level. There's so many statistical elements that go into the strategy. In football, it's all you hear about on the broadcast is them drawing lines and they're like, oh, they're doing this weird little J routers. I don't know. I don't watch football. Soccer, they talk about strategy a lot. I feel like when basketball, the strategy element is just not highlighted as much. And, no, I just think you did a really good job of not only just, you know, describing this specific phenomenon that's coming up, but also just trailing the history of how basketball has been played and how it's been changed due to the strategies in the last, like, decade or so.
I appreciate that. And one thing I want to say is kind of obvious to be like, well, yeah, this should be the next iteration. And I think part of the question is, well, how many guys of Scottie Barnes or Pascal Siakam's build really exist in the world for teams to just copy what the Raptors are doing or copy what the Cavs are doing? And it is very unique. And the Raptors are, of course, tailoring their style of defense to the personnel that they have, like we discussed. And then the Cavs are doing the same thing over there because they just have a million seven-footers. So, yeah, like, part of the future of the NBA is just to fill it up with as many guys with 7-foot wingspans and 7 feet height as you can possibly get. But also, I think the counter to that would be like, well, how many of those guys really exist that this can be just like the future of the NBA, which will be really interesting to see. But also, it's just big men are learning different things, right? So like in the past, if you had a big man, he had to hit the weight room and get in there and get tough so that he can bang bodies down low. And now we're even seeing with guys like DeMarcus Cousins or Dwight Howard or all these guys who were elite at their position have now had to shed weight and learn how to start taking threes and really change their game. So it's really interesting to see this next crop of big men really come into the league because they're just not going to be playing the same way.
Yeah, and I think the best example of this from the Raptors is like, remember JV, he came to the league. It was kind of skinny. One of the things was like, oh, look how well he moves for a guy his size. He's kind of really bouncy, he's skinny. And then after the first season, the Raptors were like, we got to get you to bulk up so you can play the center position more reliably. And then he got slower as the league got faster. And that kind of undercut his minutes to the point where his minutes are still undercut today, even though he's still, like, per minute wise, one of the most efficient big men in the league. But he just can't play as many sequences because threes. That too, right? But then,
that's like a credit to, like, the change in the NBA. Can you imagine if I said that to you when he was drafted in, like, 2011 or 2012? Oh, man.
I know. People would be like, get in the paint the way Andre Drummond does. I still remember those debates. Those were dark times, way darker than what they are right now for the team. I just think this piece is really interesting, and I would love to keep revisiting this and sort of seeing how the Raptors approach it, because I think the other flip side is the Raptors are kind of like punting the offensive end of it, because there just isn't a lot of shooting in some of these lineups that they're putting out there. Mm-hmm. Because we've seen teams innovate defensively because teams innovate offensively, and you know, when you're seeing the offensive innovation, it's generally been like more threes. Four out offenses was a big deal with the one roller down the middle. Now it's five out offenses. I mean, the Raptors, the big lineup, the only thing you could say about it is it's like maybe like 1.5 out. Like, there's not a lot of shooting, is what I'm trying to say. Is that a concern for you?
It is, yeah, but it's also really fun for me. I enjoy watching teams get out in transitions. I'm like, get a stop and run. I don't care. You can do it. But yeah. I think that is a concern, and I think what we're going to see is a bigger emphasis on shooting when they do play those guys. So Scottie's got to be able to take it. Pascal's got to be able to take it. And like, it is a concern because 3 points is greater than two, no matter how you slice it. So that's just always going to be something that matters in the NBA. But I think I trust, like, Pascal's what, shooting like 39% in his last five games. He's started to get it rolling. They're not consistent enough shooting, which is why you're never going to start that lineup, I think, for right now. But in the spot minutes it plays, it just rattles teams and confuses guys so much, which is a lot of what this regular season is. You know, teams are not really scouting for this, so you just throw it in there, it throws everything off, which is what Nick Nurse is really great at doing.
Yeah. All right. I wanted to change the subject and go from talking about the biggest players on the team to talking about the smallest guy, and that is Fred VanVleet becoming universally loved for the first time, I think. Obviously, like, people have appreciated Fred VanVleet. I'm not saying this is the first time he's been appreciated, but he's been universally loved right now with the All-Star push. Everyone's pushing for him. I'm seeing the timeline trying to engineer new ways to push for him, considering apparently retweets didn't count or something as votes. But I want to ask you, Iman, as a longtime Fred doubter, how did you come around to him this season?
Fred's great. I want to say, though, can we talk about how LaMarcus Aldridge has more votes than Fred VanVleet? Have you seen the returns? What happened there? Okay, but
Who wants to see LaMarcus Aldridge in an All-Star game, man? What did you want to see from him, for real? Like,
was he even getting voted when he was on the Portland Trailblazers? Was that a thing where people were like, yes, LaMarcus is an All-Star starter? I don't know. But anyway, so Fred VanVleet is fantastic. He's so great. I like said that he's the most important player on the Raptors right now. They need to wrap him in bubble wrap. He has been phenomenal. The fact that he's able to do what he's doing on the minutes load that he is taking is insane. His efficiency right now is insane. I think part of the Fred VanVleet sort of doubting, honestly, I think the way that this roster is built right now is perfect for Fred. And I say that because in years past, it was, okay, well, who's going to take over that point guard role? And that was never, like, in my head, it was just like, first of all, to compare anybody to Kyle Lowry, is you're never going to win in my books. But it just never felt like he could really take over that. And now you're watching and you're like, Fred doesn't need to take over Lowry's role. Fred is Fred VanVleet, which is a very distinct and different player than Lowry. He has his strengths, which are completely different than Lowry's, and he has his weaknesses that are completely different than Lowry's. And what we're seeing right now is how it works when you have guys like Pascal Siakam and Scottie Barnes, who are these unicorns that really let Fred work. What I've just really enjoyed watching is like catch and shoot Fred VanVleet, which is one of my favorite things. I've always been a supporter of Fred off ball. I've always had my concerns and worry for him on ball, not anymore. Watching Chris Middleton, I'm like, well, how did I ever doubt Fred VanVleet? Anyway, completely different players, different positions, different things. I just wanted to take a Chris Middleton shot. But for Fred, to me, it's just watching him off ball has been really spectacular, and watching how Pascal Siakam can really handle the ball, and like Pascal's growth really working in tandem with Fred VanVleet. Something I was talking about recently is everyone was worried so much last year about like, can Pascal be the number one option on a team? Can he carry a team? And it's like, none of that matters. And the chemistry between those two, and I've always thought they've had two of the best chemistry on the team since they really started together, it allows for Fred to be his best version, because you can put you can give the ball to Pascal, and you can let Fred sort of space the floor and sort of, and I will say, not to discredit what Fred has done on ball, he has been absolutely phenomenal for this team, carrying this team. He's been the best Raptor. He is the all-star. He's the most important player on the team. All good things for Fred VanVleet. I've been such a fan of his this season, and it really did start last year for me, where I'm like, yeah, this Fred kid, he's actually really, really good. He also has the greatest story, and I think he's going to be an all-star this year, and I'm really excited. I have a question for you, though.
Yeah.
If it is Kevin Durant and Stephen Curry that are the leaders of the all-star teams, which one is picking Fred?
It's got to be Steph. I feel like Steph needs Fred on his team the most, just so that he's not getting guarded by Fred. As we've seen the last two times Steph has gone against Fred, I think he shot 2 of 4, like 2 of 16, and then like 3 of 15 or something like that.
Yeah.
But you know what Fred's gonna be there to do. He's going to be hounding Steph. So you know what though? I honestly want to see a team of just like 5 guards, like 5 tiny Steph guards versus like 5 KDs. And I just want to see it, like as like a speaking to our point earlier about, you know, the big lineups versus the small ball lineups and stuff like that. Let me see the ultimate version of small ball versus the ultimate version of big ball. Just want to see how it looks. I think, look, with Fred, it's not like anything that he's done now is just like what he's been doing before. Like, I think that's the thing. He's taking big jumps in his game, and that's when people have pointed to it before. I was like, hey, we want to see these things happen for him. We want to see him finishing at an efficient rate, which he's doing finally at the rim. We want to see him distribute to other guys, which I think he was doing anyway.
He's a three-level scorer in a way that he just was not in the past. He did not have a mid-range shot at all. Like, he could, if I don't think I saw Fred take a jumper for his entire first like 2 years that was within like 20 feet. He just did not have that at all. And his finishing, like you said, was not there at all. He's really improved and made major strides in each of those regards.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing. When players improve, people generally have better opinions of them. You know, and I think right now Fred has improved so much where there's not much you can nitpick about Fred. Like, maybe it was just like, oh, I don't know, he should have taken that shot against OKC, or he shouldn't have taken the last shot against Brooklyn or whatever. These are like such small complaints now, because the bigger, broader strokes, he's improved in so many of those areas. So send Fred to the All-Star game. Go tweet it like 20 times a day, even though apparently only counts as one. What's the deal there?
It's so annoying, but like, also people complaining about that shot that he took against Brooklyn. It's like, did you watch the entire game? Like, he did everything for you, and you're mad at a single shot there. Which, like, yeah, maybe he shouldn't have. Yeah. But still, he like is carrying you. He's so important to what the Raptors do. Honestly, with the streak that they have, I'm like celebrating it, but I'm also just like wrap Fred in bubble wrap, because my goodness, this team needs him so much. But yeah, he's an all-star.
Yeah, there you go. Hey, last thing before we go. Because I know you appreciate the Celtics, but you also appreciate the demise of the Celtics. So I wanted to play a little bit of a game with you, because the Celtics just blew a 25-point lead against the New York Knicks. We all saw Mississauga's very own RJ Barrett nailing the ridiculous Bankton 3 at the buzzer to break their hearts. Ime Udoka, the Celtics' new coach, is calling his team out again. He said, quote, "It's a lack of toughness to fight through adverse times." And so he's calling on his team. This is not the first time he's called out his team. And to the point where I've been tracking this a bit, and I want to play a game with you, okay? So let's play a game called Kings or Celtics. Because that's where the Celtics are right now. They have to be confused by the Kings. So I'm going to give you a quote, and you're going to tell me if it was by Celtics head coach Ime Udoka or Kings interim coach Alvin Gentry. You ready?
Yep.
Okay, first one. Quote, "To get carved up the way we did tonight was embarrassing. Undisciplined offensively, undisciplined shot taking."
Undisciplined shot taking. I just pictured Jason Tatum's face. So I'm going to say the Celtics.
Very good. That's the Celtics. Ime Udoka said this after the Celtics got blown out by the Wolves shortly after Christmas. Yeah, I know. That's really sad. All right. Number two. quote, as the coach of the team, I want to apologize to every blank fan, blank being the team.
I want to apologize to, I'm going to say Alvin Gentry.
You're absolutely, you're two for two right now. Alvin Gentry said this on November 30th. I'm not really sure what the context of this was other than, you know what, if you're a Kings fan, someone should apologize to you. So,
do you know why I wanted to say Alvin Gentry very specifically? I saw a tweet this morning that he has the second highest win percentage of any Kings coach.
Are you serious? Yeah. You could not tell by his face in the quotes. All right.
Which, I mean, is really sad because it's still under 500. Okay, yeah.
Fair enough. Wow, that's really bad. Third quote, that performance was absolutely ridiculous, end quote.
That performance was absolutely ridiculous. Give me Gentry again.
It's Gentry again, and he said this on Boxing Day. The day they came back from Christmas, and Alvin Gentry was the same Grinch. It's unbelievable. His quotes are so funny. Okay, so you're three for three. This is great. Number four, quote, guys are getting rattled when it's not the end of the world.
Guys are getting rattled. I feel like that would be a coach of like a younger team. And like maybe a coach who's been there before. So I'm going to give it to Gentry again.
No, this was Ime Udoka yesterday. About his Celtics. I love it, man. I love it. He was talking about, hey, we're up 12. You got to just take better shots. But they didn't.
Oh, no.
And that was great. No, quote number five, quote, it's not open gym. You can't just play the same way the whole game.
Oh, that sounds like it's about like the Celtics, because they keep blowing these 20-point losses. So let's give it to them.
Yeah, that was once. You're right. So that was Ime Udoka once again yesterday. He had quite a press conference yesterday.
That's hilarious.
And then quote number six, quote, it was just embarrassing. That's the only phrase I can think of you can use is embarrassing.
I mean, that could be said about literally every single Celtics or Kings loss, but I'm going to give it to the Celtics again. I think that's
easy. No, this is Alvin Gentry. Yeah, by the way, he's an interim coach, so he can say whatever he wants because he doesn't want this job long term. But he said this back on December 13th. Again, I'm just assuming that the Kings lost like by 40 or something. And quote number seven, quote, if anyone needs me, I'll be at home drinking.
Give me Gentry.
Yeah, that's totally Gentry.
I don't think a rookie coach is saying that.
Yeah, that's Alvin Gentry. This is like out of context, but this was on New Year's Eve, which makes sense, honestly.
Okay.
And then lastly, quote, one of the poorest losses of the year, a team that is depleted as we are, just out-hustled us late in the game, and very undisciplined effort overall.
Celtics?
Yeah, that's Celtics. That's Ime Udoka after that Wolves game. So listen, the Celtics are basically Kings East. Can we conclude on this?
Oh my gosh! Sure. You know what? Yeah, let's give it to the Celtics. King East, Kings of the East. That's awful. That's awful, especially with talents like Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown on there. Awful.
Unbelievable. Imagine being a team in 11th, which the Raptors, I think, were like two games ago. But it's all good, man. It's all good. Boston.
I can't remember a time where they were under 500, as far as I'm concerned.
I don't even know what it feels like to be under 500. That's no. That's so. And we're definitely going to be two games over after this.
Hashtag new year, new us.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, to be honest, 2021 was a horrible year just in general, but especially for the Raptors. So.
Yeah.
Iman, thanks for joining us on the program. I appreciate you. Anything you want to plug before you go?
I am going to be coming out with a piece on DeMar DeRozan because he is not the most improved player of the year. Toss that out and respect his entire career. So that'll be coming out shortly. And Dishes and Dimes, please, guys, check it out. And also, your old stomping grounds. Yasmin and I have a podcast coming out on Yahoo Sports today where we talk all about the Raptors' recent run and a lot of the stuff that we've touched on today, including Fred VanVleet's All-Star candidacy.
Okay, there you go. Check all that out. So that's a good spot for us to take a break. I'm your host, Will Liu, and you're listening to The Raptor Show powered by DoorDash on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Will, what's up, man? Do you think Nick Nurse should run the Fred Pascal pick and roll more?
Alex, are you trying to talk basketball with me? What's going on?
I just want to be able to understand the Raptors' offense easily. As easy as DoorDash is making it for me to support my local restaurants on game nights with a perfect spread of delicious food.
It's really incredible that every conversation with you turns into a DoorDash ad.
Because our friends at DoorDash connect you with the restaurants you love, Will. It's convenient, and you can get whatever you want delivered right to your door. So, Will, what are you ordering this week?
Well, you could probably guess, but this week I'm ordering wonton soup for breakfast, hand-pulled noodles for lunch, and scallion noodles for dinner.
That's why I call you the real noodles of Toronto Sports Radio. And ordering with DoorDash is so easy. Open the DoorDash app, choose what you want from where you want, and your items will be left safely outside your door with the contactless delivery drop-off setting. Plus, for a limited time, our listeners can get 25% off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter code THEFAN25. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back to The Raptor Show, powered by DoorDash on SportsFM90 The Fan. Before we get to Twitter questions, which we will be taking pretty much every Friday, actually, because it's a pretty chill way to end the week, I wanted to make sure we took this time to give out some shout-outs. So thank you to people and everybody who made The Raptor Show and The Raptors Reaction Podcast possible this week, including our producers Andrew Holland, Dylan Brown, and JR. Shout-out to Ryan Favreau, Kyle, Maria, DT, Greg, Sansoni, and everyone else supporting us behind the scenes. A thank you to all our guests this week for making time as well, which includes Joe Wolfon, Trey Kirby, Amy Otterberg, Vivek Jacob, Tyler Tynes, Iman Adan, and Asad Alvi on the React Pod. So for the second segment, as I mentioned, we are going to take some Twitter questions, and I have gotten way too many, so I do apologize. I'm not going to be able to get to most of these. I'm going to try to pick through the ones that probably are the most relevant to the show at the moment and go from there. But if I didn't get to it, I apologize. So we really got like 90 questions in about an hour. And yeah, there's only like 20 minutes off on this block. So let's go to the first question here. And there's like been a couple of questions along sort of this line of thought. And this one comes from Stevie, who asks, is it worth it? Is it worth making a trade now to attack six, which I'm assuming is six in the standings, or wait till the offseason and push for top six seeding next season? So I think for me, it really obviously depends on what specific trades are out there, who is available, what kind of what the market looks like. If you look at the league at the moment, right, you're probably trying to figure out, okay, which teams are for sure tanking, which teams are for sure not going to have ambitions this year. I would say Orlando is definitely in that group. Detroit is in that group. Indiana is in that group. Houston is in that group. Oklahoma City, Portland. I mean, Portland's an old question. Another question altogether. What do they really want to do? Sacramento and New Orleans. So there's actually a decent number of teams available to trade. Obviously, more in the West than the East. It depends on specifically what the options are. I think when you're looking at the Raptors, they actually do have pretty good trade assets, but most of the guys who are trade assets to them are players that are on the roster right now. I don't really see this as a situation where the Raptors need to be trading future picks unless they're getting someone who is clearly going to join their core group. I like the fact that the Raptors have had all their first-round picks intact. And so, you know, when you're looking at the Raptors and how they acquire talent, generally speaking, that's what they do. They draft them and then they develop them. They've done such a good job with that. And I don't want them to sacrifice a first-round pick. So if you can get someone, you know, let's say with the more fringe pieces on the roster, whether that's, you know, you're out on Malachi and you want to see, you know, see him used as a piece, maybe you move a future second rounder, you have some cash to move around as well that you can always send in a trade. You could send some expiring contracts. Like, for example, Chris Boucher is expiring. Now, of course, he is playing a lot better of late and he's definitely contributing. But if you don't have plans on re-signing him, then that's a chance to maybe move a guy. Obviously, Goran Dragic is a guy who is $19 million just sitting there in Miami. Yeah, clearly, if he's available to play, I think he can contribute to many teams so long as he's willing to and he's making a lot of money. So making the salaries match might be difficult, but at the same time, you know, at this time of the year, you can use a big piece of expiring salary like that. So those are kind of the things the Raptors are shopping with, which is, you know, you're not going to get a huge piece that's for sure going to crack your rotation, I think. Having said that, though, the area that the Raptors definitely need the most help at is backup guard. Whether that's Svi Mihailuk or Malachi Flynn or Delano Banton, none of these three guys have given the Raptors consistent production to the point where I don't think Nick wants to play them all consistently. We've already seen Nick with the healthier roster axe the backup point guard position. He's basically just said, we're going to give those minutes to Scottie Barnes. We're going to play super big. And yes, we're going to be very deficient in shooting, but we're going to be very good defensively. We're going to run off those misses. So far, that approach is really working, but I think I still do want to see like another 2 weeks of it to make a firm assessment. But right now, it's promising. But yeah, I think the backup shooting guard spot there is really tough, because if you look at the shooting guard position on the whole, there's only two on the team: Gary Trent Jr., who's been excellent, and then Steve Mihailuk, who has just not been good. And maybe you say, well, we can wait for Steve's shot to come around. But even historically, he's only like a 35% three-point shooter. He's limited in terms of what he could do off the bounce in terms of creating for others. He turns the ball over quite a bit when he drives. He's not really a plus defender. So, yeah, if he's not going to shoot well, then you know, you're going to see the results that you're getting right now, which is the fact that people are dissatisfied with his performances. And to me, that should be an easier spot to fill. I mean, like, guards are more plentiful than bigs, right? Just because taller people in the world are rarer than shorter people. And to be honest, like, this is a guard-oriented league. There's a lot of good guards out there. So if they can use one of their trade pieces, as I mentioned before, not any of the core pieces, but one of those trade pieces to get someone who can come in and be a better backup shooting guard than Svi, I would explore that. Absolutely. Is that going to be enough to push you in the top six? No, probably not. I think the generally speaking, what's going to keep the Raptors in the top six is, one, if they stay healthy, right? That's the biggest thing. If they have their guys available, if they avoid COVID, all this other stuff, that's going to be huge. And I think when they have these top guys available, they're going to be enough to push them into that group. When you're looking at the ones who are directly ahead of them in the standings, whether that's Cleveland at six or Philadelphia at five, the Raptors are, you know, a game and a half back of Cleveland, two games back of Philly. They're not that far behind. I mean, we'll see what Philly does with Ben Simmons eventually. We'll see what Cleveland does in addition to getting Rajon Rondo to make up for, you know, the hits that they've taken in the backcourt between Sexton and now Rubio. But I don't know. I think the Raptors can even get to that level as well. It really just depends on the health. The shooting off the bench, though, a shooting upgrade would be a nice to have. And there's a couple of options, which I think have been asked in other questions here, but we'll get to them in a bit. Next question comes from Sean, who wants to ask about, you know, is there going to be a little bit of regression coming in from Fred? Now, of course, Fred is playing really well, but, you know, as Sean writes in, with Fred having a career this year, is this the expectation for him going forward now, or will we see some regression in terms of his numbers next year? Is it a big enough set of games to say this is what Fred is now? I think if you're talking about regression for Fred, mostly it's probably going to come from the catch and shoot threes. I mean, right now he's hitting like essentially 50% on catch and shoot threes. He's hitting them at a ridiculous rate. We've seen them in the games too. A lot of these, especially of late, have been like in transition with like maybe a foot of space, and he's just launching them. And of course he can hit this. Like, these are shots that he can make, but at the rates that he's making now, which is like close to 50% on catch and shoot threes, that is going to be difficult. Other than that, though, I'm pretty confident in saying the rest is sort of the level for Fred now. Like, I think he's tangibly improved so many elements of his game, whether that's the finishing at the basket, whether that's the mid-range game to add in sort of the threat of scoring at all three levels. We know he's a good three-point shooter, too, and he's always been a good catch-and-shoot three-point shooter. So it's not even like that specifically is going to, like, crater anything. I think it might just move from, like, 50%, which is a bit absurd, to about 40, you know, maybe even 45%. And it's a small dip like that, you might not even necessarily notice all that much. So I guess what I'm trying to say is this is just Fred now. And I think you can kind of anticipate that. The bigger question with this is, when you look down the line, you know, at Fred at this level, let's say Fred was entering free agency right now at this level with the season he's having, he would command the max. So I think that's the other question you might have to ask yourself. But to me, I think keeping Fred is a no-brainer. It was a no-brainer when he hit free agency after his second year in the league, when he got like a 2-year, $18 million, I think something like that, deal. That was a no-brainer. It was a no-brainer to re-sign him to this 4-year deal. And whenever he comes up again, I think it'll be a no-brainer to keep him again. I genuinely think that he's that important to the team, both in terms of production and also the team culture. The next question from Rod: despite the partial results of the fan votes released yesterday, that is a popularity test and shows to focus on American media, do you think Siakam has any chance of getting to the All-Star, considering exclusively his performance in the front court options in the East? So I think that's a good question, because the front court options in the East aren't actually that strong. You know, obviously there's some really good ones, but you know, when you're thinking of the best forwards, especially the way Pascal is playing of late, he is totally on that level. Now, the difficulty here is just because Pascal started the season late because of the fact that he had off-season shoulder surgery. Yes, he returned slightly earlier than expected from ahead of schedule, so that does help in terms of missed games. He's played 22 games. It's not like specifically that's going to be disqualifying him from the All-Star push, but I think people will have that on their minds. And also, when he first came back from the injuries, he just wasn't as effective defensively, and there was a stretch where the Raptors kept losing games, and that kind of hurt them. Of course, of late, when you're thinking about what Pascal's been doing, you know, since coming back from, you know, the couple of games missed due to COVID, I mean, the numbers of late are absurd. Right now, of course, he's playing at an All-Star level, 25 points per game, 11.4 rebounds, 6.6 assists, 1.4 steals, a block a game, shooting 52% from the field, 39% from three, getting the free throw line 7 times per game on the last 5 games. Of course, he's an All-Star during this recent stretch. And honestly, even if you take it back to like earlier in the year, right? Like, you know, of course, you can always play this sort of arbitrary endpoints game. But I mean, man, he's been pretty efficient on the season overall. Even if you go back and look at his last 17 games, he's at 22 points, 9 rebounds, 5 assists, a steal, a block, shooting 50% from the field. Like, there's a good case to be made. Really, the thing is just how much do people factor in the missed time? And he missed 10 games at the start of the season, then missed another game due to rest, and then he missed another 2 due to COVID. So 13 games out, is that enough to overcome? We'll see. We'll see. And also, to be honest, I could see a lot of situations this year where voters start to sort of play around with who's playing what position. Like, is DeRozan a forward or a guard? Well, I mean, Chicago has guards, right? He plays a lot with Caruso. He plays a lot with LaVine. He plays a lot with Lonzo Ball. So what does that make DeMar? Is he a guard or is he a forward, right? And so I think especially with how many qualified guards that should be in the All-Star consideration, I think a lot of people are going to be playing around with their votes to essentially put guards in as forwards. Next question from Jonathan. There is a need for backup point guard at and center. What position should the Raptors fill first? I think it's pretty clear. I think they should address the backup point guard. To me, I think it's not saying that they don't care about the centers, but as we discussed in the first block with Iman, like, they want to play these centerless groups because they want to, like, this is the theory of it. Like, they don't really want to play a plotting 7-footer, not be able to switch everything, not be able to run out in transition, not be able to space the floor in the way that they want to do it specifically. Although I don't say, I mean, look, spacing the floor right now with Precious and Chris or even Kem is not good. It's just generally, but I don't think they value the center position nearly as much. And if that's the strategy they want to go with, I think you would at least give it a year or so to see how that works before sort of addressing and changing strategy and pivoting altogether. So yeah, I think backup point guard is easier to address. And it's also something that, you know, they probably have more of an interest in addressing, especially the fact that Fred's leading the league in minutes. That's more of an immediate concern than what they have at center. I think they're actually, based on the way they're playing right now, based on this way that Nick has found ways to sort of combine these sort of centers and play two at once, it's become a lot less of a problem, right? When was the last time you got mad at the Raptors for a lack of rebounding or a lack of handling a big man down low? It's been a while. Like, the last time I remember this was like probably Steven Adams against Memphis, and that was like in November. So it's less of a problem than you think. Rowan Hamilton tweets in, who should the Raptors be targeting at the trade deadline? This team clearly needs backcourt depth. So who are some guards that can help the team? And I think, look, there's another question that someone brought in of, like, you know, a couple of guard options that are available. I think these are probably the more obvious candidates. I don't think the Raptors will be specifically in for any of these three guys. But when you're looking at Eric Gordon, who's on the Rockets, they're clearly not going anywhere. He could probably be moved. Gary Harris is just a perpetual trade candidate. He's been traded already from Denver to, Orlando, but Orlando's not doing much this year. Terrence Ross, another guard in Orlando, he could be moved. I don't know specifically if any of these guys, I mean, all these three guys could contribute to the Raptors. I would say out of the three, I'm probably most confident in Eric Gordon, followed closely by Terrence Ross. But to me, I mean, I don't know. I still think that the Raptors will probably look a little bit more long-term in terms of a guy that they can re-sign, they can keep as part of the core. I don't see Eric Gordon as sort of being that guy. Terrence Ross, maybe, but they already had Terrence. He's improved a lot, but I don't know if he's like a core guy for them moving forward. Although I do know he has love for the city, so that's great. And then Gary Harris, he's just kind of very average to me. I don't know how much that excites me to trade for. I mean, like, one guy that I was thinking about, which, I mean, I don't think there's any sort of talk about him being a trade asset or or he's on the block or anything like this. But I do wonder how much the Spurs want to invest in Lonnie Walker the fourth long term. They do have a lot of guards, you know, and whether that's DeJounte Murray, whether that's, you know, Derek White is, I guess he's a shooting guard, sometimes plays three for them. You know, we just saw Josh Primo. They just drafted pretty high in the draft. They clearly have something invested in him. You know, they have guys. They have guys available. I mean, of course, they have the salary. They could just opt to keep him, even if they don't necessarily see him as a core key piece. They could still keep him. He's only 23 years old, and they did draft him 18th overall in 2018. But, I mean, you know, he's coming up on a contract year for him. He'll be restricted. It's he's not shooting the three as well this year as previously. He was at 36% last year on 5 threes a game. This year he's down to 31. And who knows? Maybe you just give the Spurs a call. See if they want anything the Raptors have available to offer. I think a longer-term option like that probably entices me more than any of these pieces were. You know, if the Raptors were like an established 50-win team and, you know, they just needed one more piece to go over the top, then yeah, these are the guys that you call for. But to me, they're not as exciting as someone who you could potentially see growing into something better than what they are right now. And I see all three of these guys, whether that's Harris, Ross, or Gordon, as guys who are at their peak or past their peak, quite honestly. Along this question of the point guards, someone asked in, at the Carltopia, asked in, what's going on with Malachi? Is it a lack of confidence? Is he not showing off at practice? I mean, first, how would I know? We're not privy to watching practice, although I would love that if we could. But yeah, I mean, I think it partially is a lack of confidence, but really it's just a lack of production. Like, he comes in, doesn't really seem like he has a specific plan for what he's going to be doing. Like, I think obviously that's harder to do that at the point guard position as compared to someone like Justin Champagne, who comes in, he knows exactly what he's going to do. He's going to work along the baseline. He's going to wait for the ball to get to him, and he's going to make a couple of plays at the rim. Like, he knows exactly what he's going to do. Utah knows exactly what he's going to come in to do off the bench. Even Sfi knows what he's going to do off the bench. He just doesn't really end up like executing it. I don't actually know what Malachi's plan is to come into the game, and I don't know if you do too. Like, put yourself in the mind of Nick Nurse. You're in a bit of a stretch here where the Raptors are kind of like they need to push off the bench, or you know they're playing well, but it's the fourth quarter. You need to maintain momentum, and you look down your bench and you look at Malachi, and you're like, okay, what can he give me that I know he will give me? And I don't really know what that specific thing is. Maybe it's the on-ball defense for a quicker guard. That's probably the most reliable thing you can get from him. But other than that, you don't know if he's going to come in a game and hit shots. You don't know if he's going to come in a game and settle the offense down. You don't know if he's going to run the offense efficiently. So that's why he doesn't play, right? And that's unfortunate. And whether that has to do with confidence, whether that has to just do with learning the system or learning the position, it's unfortunate that a point guard, you can't necessarily turn to him for something consistent. And that's where Malachi is right now. So I don't know. I feel bad because I really like what Malachi did last year. I wouldn't say I was like really high on him, but like obviously I was encouraged by him. I thought he would have a really good chance to come in and take the backup point guard position, but that just hasn't happened for him yet. And maybe he continues to wait, or you know, maybe the Raptors move on. You never know. Next one from B. Hiron. As DJ Wilson has been signed back again, what do you think he can do and to become the Raptors like a permanent rotation player? And I think for this question, so yeah, DJ Wilson's back on a 10-day contract. I mean, first off, he's got to, you know, secure himself to at least be signed for the rest of the season after this 10-day contract and join the team if possible. What can he do to become a permanent rotation player? I mean, I'm not going to pretend like I've seen that much of DJ Wilson in his short time in the NBA so far. He obviously played in Milwaukee. You know, it seems like he has a shooting skill set. It seems like he has the ability to play some defense. And I think that, more than anything else, is where the Raptors will try to look for in terms of, like, if you can play some defense, then Nick will probably keep you in mind. And so let's just start with the defense. We know he's done it well for, like, short stints here, but let's be real, it's a 10-day, so it's hard to fully assess that. He seems to have the length and the body to play the Raptors style. And really, it's just like, what do you bring that's better than a guy like, for example, Utah? What do you bring that's better than a guy like Chris or Precious? And right now, I don't think he has anything specifically to get to that level. So he's just got to keep rounding out his game. But mostly, his biggest thing is he's got to secure a long-term contract for the rest of the season. and not necessarily just bounce around with the 10 days, which is nothing against people bouncing around the 10 days. It's just you're probably not going to get a rotation spot if you're just, you know, joining the teams on a hardship exception. You're really just kind of filling in. At the moment, we got a lot more questions. I'm just going to have to fly through them. Someone asked in where's the YouTube link. Right now, we're not in studio. Me and Alex, we're both recording from home. So that's why there's no YouTube video or link or whatever. When we get back to the studio sometime, then the link will come back up. But I appreciate everyone who was following along. It was very fun to do. And it's something that we plan to go back to for sure. And then the last three questions, we got one from our producer, Derek. Derek asked, what would Alex give me for Secret Santa? A, gift card, B, something regifted, or C, a signed copy of Prehistoric? Honestly, probably all three. I'm not on a ruin the surprise, but if you listen to yesterday's episode, I think he already teased exactly what he's going to give you, in addition to obviously another signed copy of his books. So that does it for us today. Thank you for all your questions. I really appreciate them. I've been your host, Will Liu, and you've been listening to The Raptor Show, powered by DoorDash on SportsFM90 The Fan. Make sure you find The Raptor Show wherever you listen to podcasts and subscribe, and please rate and review our show. Thanks once again to our guests, Iman Adan, to our board producer, Dylan Brown, and we will talk to you soon. Are you ready to get fired up for the next game? Nothing helps more than a bowl of Campbell's new chunky spicy chicken noodle soup. Let me tell you, it's got tons of seasoned chicken, veggies, and noodles all in a tasty spicy broth, so it'll fill you up and get you fired up. So take your day to the next level and see if you can handle the heat with the new chunky spicy chicken noodle soup.